as she said, I'm Isabella, and today I'm going to be talking about formal and informal support group services for intimate partner violence survivors. I do not have any relationships to disclose. And so this is probably a review for some, and Dr. Winnestrom did mention some of these statistics, but I'd like to just start off with some of these. In the United States, an estimated 1 in 4 women will experience domestic violence in her lifetime, and approximately 1.3 million women suffer one or more physical assaults by an intimate partner annually. In Florida, where this research was conducted, over 113,000 domestic violence crimes were reported to law enforcement in 2010. And although there's no data collected specifically in regard to intimate partner violence, a subcategory of domestic violence, about half of these crimes were committed by a spouse or cohabitant. During the same year, Florida certified domestic violence shelters provided over 477,000 nights of emergency shelter to more than 15,000 survivors and their children. And along with emergency shelter, these centers also provide advocacy, job and housing assistance, and social and emotional support, which highlights their crucial role in assisting survivors of intimate partner violence. So a service that many shelters provide is support groups, and these often focus on topics such as recognizing the violence that survivors have experienced, enhancing self-esteem, and then developing support networks. These aim to address the consequences of abusive relationships, including things like anxiety and depression and social isolation. Relevant research demonstrates that support groups in shelter and community-based settings can play a major role in coping with intimate partner violence, as well as helping to establish support networks by challenging social isolation. And as Dr. Winnestrom mentioned, while shelters and outreach offices, they're primarily focused on service provision, and then that leaves a pretty big gap in looking at evaluation of these services, how effective they are, and you know where we can enhance services to better meet survivor needs. And so, and particularly in a shelter environment, support groups can be very important because residents are struggling with some major transitions and may have difficulty adjusting to new surroundings, communal living, developing, adapting safety plans, negotiating their options and potential for permanently leaving an abuser and or returning to an abuser, and then establishing healthy support networks and relationship habits. So in order to enhance these outcomes, it's crucial that we evaluate these support groups to better meet the needs of survivors. So the study explored women's experiences with and perspectives on formal and informal support groups that were offered at a domestic violence shelter in Florida to better understand the barriers and facilitators to participation and also the perceived benefits to attending in order to provide insight on how to better meet survivor needs and enhance participation at this specific shelter, but I think a lot of the information is really applicable to the shelter environment in general. The research questions that guided this study were, what are the perceived barriers and facilitators to formal and informal support group attendance? How do formal and informal support groups benefit participants, and how do participants perceive those benefits? And then also, how can support group services be adapted or modified to enhance or to increase attendance and better meet participant needs? So in terms of things like different topics or activities and what would be most feasible. So data were collected through semi-structured interviews, one focus group, and regular participant observation during about 8 months of field work at a domestic violence shelter in Florida. The shelter's support group programs provide a variety of formal and informal support groups. So there were formal support groups for domestic violence and intimate partner violence, and then empowerment-based groups, and also informal groups focused on skill building and things like time management, budgeting, and activity groups also. So 40 women participated in these interviews regarding their perspectives on and experiences with formal and informal support group services. They also talked about their desires and preferences in regard to these services, perceived barriers and facilitators, and the benefits also. All interviews were conducted in person, but to protect their confidentiality, I only took detailed handwritten notes rather than audio recordings. And then all quotes that are included in this presentation come from the participants, and they were handwritten and then read back to the participants to ensure their accuracy. And then to maintain their privacy, all the names that are used are pseudonyms. So looking at participant demographics, overall 45 women participated in this research, and 40 women were participated in interviews and 5 in the one single focus group. Demographic data weren't collected during the focus group, so all of this data reflects interview participants, and the focus group data were exclusively used for qualitative purposes. The average age of participants was 37, ranging from 19 to 64 years of age. Participants had resided at shelter for an average of about 3 weeks, though the range was about just under a week to 12 weeks. Most participants were at the shelter for the first time, though about a third had previously resided at the shelter for any period of time. And the majority of participants were not employed at the time of interview, though I did conduct interviews throughout the day and in the evening in order to kind of capture a more representative sample. And also, the majority of participants did not have children with them at the shelter. So participants identified 4 main areas of benefit in regard to group participation, which I will cover in this section. And these included learning new information and skills, building confidence, self-esteem, and a sense of empowerment, receiving and providing social support, and then also distraction and relaxation. And I'll also be discussing the participant-identified barriers and facilitators to participation, and also recommendations for support group enhancement. So one of the main themes that arose in regard to benefits was learning new information and skills, such as the signs of domestic violence and intimate partner violence, coping skills, and then also practical skill building. For example, Sylvia explained that after learning about the warning signs of domestic violence, she realized that her daughter was in a similar situation, and she was able to apply this newly gained knowledge to help her daughter recognize the violence and leave that relationship. Aisha explained that she benefited from the domestic violence support groups by being able to recognize the behaviors of intimate partner violence and to understand why she had stayed. She went on to explain that, "I need to learn why I did it, why I stayed, and why I didn't realize what was going on." And that was a pretty common theme in a lot of the interviews, that, you know, women were still going through the process, which is of kind of defining the violence that they go through, which is a very important aspect in kind of recognizing violence and then making those decisions to seek help. Participants felt that the knowledge that they gained from support groups facilitated coping as well. Fatima explained, "The DV support groups helping me cope with what's occurred and to hear other people's input as well. It helps with coping and learning off of other people's experiences." Many participants shared that through group services, they developed new and improved existing skills, including things like time management and budgeting, goal setting, parenting, and crafting abilities. And they felt good about learning to do things on their own and being able to support themselves. Chantel shared that, "I think talking about a way out of abuse would be effective, like budgeting, parenting, skill building. Yeah, take these classes, go to these groups." She stressed that developing skills like these would lead to more independence and an improved sense of confidence among shelter residents, many of whom, she emphasized, have not likely been allowed to take charge of their own finances and decisions about their lives due to the control of their abuser. So participants also shared that they benefited from attendance at group services through improvements to their self-esteem, confidence, and feelings of empowerment. Demetria shared, "I didn't have confidence before I got here. Now I'm learning to do it by myself. I don't need to depend on no man." And then Megan reflected on her personal growth through her group participation, sharing that the groups make me feel good about, or that I'm not the only one going through this, and people listen to you. She went further to explain the personal changes that she felt that she had gone through as a result of her participation in groups. She said, "I don't cry when I talk now. I feel stronger. I used to be a closed person, but I'm more confident now." Many participants also referred to the groups as a safe space to open up because of the support that they found, both from other participants as well as the group facilitators. Women stated that they felt supported and were reminded that they were not alone in their experiences and struggles. Jody shared, "Everybody has a story, and it's not the same, and it's like we're counseling with each other." Participants also explained that they not only received support through group attendance, but they were also able to provide support to others, and that led to an exchange of support between shelter residents. So Jasmine shared, "These girls, these ladies, they're feeling so that they don't have the confidence, but I need to talk to them. I've been through this and it gets better. Participants also reported that they attended groups in search of a distraction and or an outlet to relax. This was noted as an important benefit of group because particularly some of the groups that were informal support groups, things like the arts and crafts groups, we have volunteers come from like Avon and Mary Kate and do beauty groups. Allison shared that the groups are a distraction for her, something to take your mind off your circumstances and the abuse that you went through. And Tammy explained that hearing the stories of others stopped the chattering in her mind. She shared that she was able to stop dwelling on what was going on with her and listen to the experiences of others, which helped her gain more perspective on her own situation. And so overall, women shared some important benefits to group participation that cover psychosocial benefits and practical skill-based benefits. However, women also identified barriers to participation as well as facilitators that help improve involvement. So the primary barriers that participants discussed were timing, or that was the primary barrier. Participants discussed timing conflicts in regard to appointments and work schedules. Many participants shared that during the day they have a variety of appointments that conflict with the timing of a lot of groups, and things like medical appointments, searching for housing and work, and then also kind of the legal engagements that you know are common when you are going through IPV. About half of participants reported that the evening would be the best time for group. I know typically in shelter settings, you know, your advocates work in mostly during the day, sometimes into the early evening. So that's kind of a challenge in terms of having people hold those groups in the evening. But that was the time that participants felt would be most convenient for them. As Allison put it, she said that groups are a nice way to wind down at the end of the day. There were also concerns about maintaining confidentiality, which was another barrier to participation. These concerns were in regard to other residents adhering to the confidentiality agreement that shelters maintain, particularly during the formal support groups, which is a common practice. But some women explained that the formal support group could be particularly emotionally overwhelming at times and that they felt very vulnerable. Mildred shared, "It made me feel better, but it also made me cry because we reevaluate our situation and you think about how things could have gone and it's hard." She and others shared that because of this emotional nature of the group, they felt a sense of vulnerability and worried about other participants maintaining their confidentiality while sharing those experiences. But on the other hand, women also reported facilitators to group participation. Wanda explained how she liked the interactive nature of groups, the group leaders and facilitators, and that she got free time away from her baby because at this particular shelter we offer daycare so that people can come without their kids. And so the provision of childcare was actually seen as an important facilitator to participation and in some cases even an incentive. They also appreciated the personal outreach from group leaders that helped facilitate participation. Sylvia explained that she felt that advocates wanted her to succeed, that it wasn't just a class or a group, but that they really believed in her. And then participants also found the incentives that they received in some groups as an effective motivator and also something that boosted their confidence. These are things like notebooks, condoms, makeup bags. They're usually related to the group topic and in some sense would allow them to implement the skills that they were learning. Sierra explained, "It's like you're getting rewarded for being who you are." So while this study specifically evaluated single shelter support group services, I wanted to include some of the women's recommendations for improvement alongside their insights regarding the benefits and facilitators and barriers, because I think this information further expands our understanding of what survivors desire from formal and informal support group services in a shelter setting. And so the two major recommendations were related to timing and then additional group topics. Regarding timing, participants expressed desires for more frequent groups and also scheduling groups at different times of the day and the week. For example, Aisha shared that she would like to see groups offered two times a week or longer because you don't get into detail on the subjects during one-hour groups. Others suggested offering groups in the evenings or the weekends to better meet residents' schedules. And while overall residents enjoyed current group offerings at this specific shelter, they also responded enthusiastically with a variety of additional topics of interest when they were asked. The most popularly suggested groups were things like arts and crafts, which they also often referred to as art therapy, and also fun and active groups. Many participants found that these groups were beneficial not only because they were able to develop new skills, but also because they found them a welcome distraction. As I mentioned earlier, Mildred, explained that crafting groups helped her know that her hands were not worthless, and that she explained that it felt good to apply these skills and make something. And the frequent referral to these groups as art therapy indicates that residents found therapeutic benefits. And alongside arts and crafts groups that were both entertaining and therapeutic, participants also expressed their interest in fun and active groups, things like recreational activities, physical activities, and family groups. In a large part, this was in order to better get to know other residents, because you're coming in, you don't know anybody, you're sharing a room maybe with four or five strangers, and so kind of having that communal feeling alongside the communal living was something they really desired. And then finally, participants also expressed interest in expanded support and counseling services, either individual or group, to support specifically for overcoming psychological attachment to their abuser, better understanding their own struggles with dependency, and also explicitly talking about experiences with establishing their own independence. So overall, participants expressed that formal and informal support group services address many of the various needs that they identified as a consequence of their experiences of violence, providing emotional, informational, and instrumental support, and a sense of belonging. Support groups typically focus on ensuring the future safety of participants, recognizing experiences of violence, addressing feelings of anger and grief, enhancing self-esteem, developing support networks, reducing isolation. These really are related to a lot of the psychosocial outcomes of anxiety, depression, and findings from this research demonstrate that women participating in support groups are experiencing many of the benefits as a result of their participation. And these include things that I mentioned earlier, like improved self-esteem, confidence, a feeling of self-control, and understandings of the violence they've experienced. Participants also spoke about how groups help them work through feelings of guilt and responsibility related to their violent relationships, and allowed them a safe space to share their experiences and hear those of others. Support groups were also found to address the non-psychosocial outcomes of domestic violence through skill building for practical application and women's reestablishment of their independence. And so some of these skills included things like budgeting, time management, healthy parenting, and job seeking. And women often shared that they had little experience with personal financial management or were unable to work outside the home due to the violence and control of their former partner. So, and in fact, economic violence, which includes restricting access to employment and exclusion from financial decision making, is a very common is a common characteristic of intimate partner violence. So, in addition to addressing the negative psychosocial outcomes of physical, emotional, and sexual violence, some group services at this shelter also help to address the consequences of economic violence and the reestablishment of women's independence. So overall, what this research demonstrates is that the importance of support group services, as well as the importance of evaluation that can play an important role in identifying avenues for enhancement of services. And although the data were collected evaluating a specific program in a specific shelter, participants represented a broad range of backgrounds and ages. And while the sample size is small, the population is pretty representative. And I just want to end by saying thank you. Thank you for everyone who came, and also to the participants and the staff at the shelter. And my travel here was supported by the University of South Florida's College of Public Health SHARP grant. Yeah, references.